You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Cotton Club crew. As per usual, we're going to talk all things Texas Tech sports. We're going to start this episode talking about the baseball season's efforts against Texas. We're going to recap that, talk a bit about Baylor, but we'll primarily focus on what we saw against the big homestand in that rivalry game. This is actually a two-part recording, though we will be splitting the episodes in half. This part of the episode is focusing exclusively on stuff going on the diamond. The second episode that we're going to split and post separately, we'll be talking about basketball-related news, the close of the season, the Big 12 tournament, all that fun stuff. So we're going to start with baseball, though, and that will be the primary and only focus of this episode. And, you know, it was a tough, tough weekend for the Red Raiders at home in a series that they really, quite frankly, couldn't afford to lose. There's obviously a lot of baseball left to be played, and one series does not define a season. But quite frankly, I don't think it's a shock to tell anybody who's been paying attention that that Texas team's not very good, and you were unable to win two out of three games in that series against a team that was, frankly, they have underperformed to such an extreme degree that we haven't seen in several years from that program and David Pierce's squad. So it was a huge letdown. We're going to start on the most obvious front, which is to talk about the pitching. The Red Raiders would surrender just a bunch of runs in this series. 33 runs to a team that was 7-4 coming in is not ideal, let alone to do it on your home ballpark, and even more so to do it in a series that had a lot of extra meaning besides just the importance of winning your home baseball series. Joe, it was an embarrassment on Friday. The Red Raider pitching staff was completely hammered, and I can't imagine how many games you're supposed to win, or excuse me, lose if you score 8 runs or more, but you're not going to win any giving up 22 runs. Let's start there. Friday night staff, what's your impression here? What are some of the things you saw? What could maybe be done to adjust what's going on with your pitching staff, specifically looking at your Friday night rotation?
It's kind of tough. I mean, Kyle Robinson is still by far your best starting pitcher by the numbers that we could throw out there. So he's going to remain your Friday starter. I don't think Friday's performance is indicative of how he pitches normally. We've seen him pitch against a top 10 baseball team and hold his own for a few more innings than what he did against the Longhorns on Friday. So I don't think this is how he pitches normally, just based on the body of work up until this game. So I just think that he had an off night. I mean, all 11 hits, 11 runs were all earned. He had 3 Ks, 3 walks. That's a lot. That's one per inning, and his 3 2/3 innings of work. It's tough. It's just tough to kind of point the finger exactly where the issue is. And I know that Gardner is going to receive a majority of the pointing because this has been, a constant. This is the common denominator. This is the thing that hasn't changed, and our pitching has stayed the same. And the common denominator is Coach Gardner. It's just how it is. I think there's something that needs to be tweaked in our lineup. Tweaked in our rotation. I do believe we have the arms in the bullpen to, overcome such things like this of a bad outing, with Josh Sanders and Trendon Parrish and guys like that. I just think that this team is more than capable of overcoming some woes that the starting pitching does have. But I think it was just an off night. I think Tadlock threw it in early, and that's kind of based on some of the arms he started throwing in this game, particularly with Case, Huffling, Parker, and Erdman, guys that haven't necessarily seen a whole lot of playing time out of the pen. I think Tadlock was waving that white flag a little early and, saving some of those arms for the other two games that that hadn't been played yet.
I can tell you that watching Friday night, you're obviously probably not going to have many games that go that horrifically wrong from a pitching perspective. Texas is a good offensive ballpark, not good at a ball club, not good at much else, but they have been known to hit the ball well. But what was really disheartening about it is just like you threw a whole bunch of arms out there to try to stop the bleeding, and not a single one really made any difference at all. It's frustrating when your starting pitching's not looking good. It's really frustrating when your relief pitching's not looking good. And it is a calamity when both aren't looking good. And your pitching in general was god awful in that game. And that shows kind of the depth of your pen to be quite thin, because what Tadlock was doing later on was he was just throwing a bunch of arms out there to see what would stick. It's one of those games, like once it got away from you at some point, you just try to preserve the weekend and you start throwing guys that you ordinarily maybe wouldn't, or trying some different things and some guys in different spots and some guys you're primarily going to throw mostly just weekday series or wouldn't throw at all. And, despite all the manipulation, all the attempts, nobody looked competent, nobody looked comfortable, and they all got hammered. Saturday was a different story, though. The Red Raiders came into Saturday desperate for a win, and the pitching staff was far, far more competent in this game. Hewer got himself into quite a few jams, but the Longhorns were unable to take advantage of any of them. He would surrender, I believe, both solo shots were recorded to Hewer. And more importantly in this game, he was able to get the distance despite racking up quite a high pitch count. I think he broke over 110 pitches in this one. It was a pretty startlingly long run considering how much trouble he had commanding his pitches during the game. There was a lot of traffic on the bases. But all that mattered is Hewer was striking guys out in critical moments and forcing Texas to work for every at-bat. He didn't make it easy. He battled, and he kept a very clean slate with just the 2 runs scored. The Red Raiders would win this game. We would also see Mr. Ryan Free as well as Josh Sanders in this one to close things out. This was the best night of the series by a wide margin. Not only did you win, but it was the only time you looked like you were playing complete baseball out there. Let's talk first about Hewer. Like I said, he faced a lot of – there was a lot of noise in the base pass, a lot of tricky jams. He navigated all of them through a lot of good pitches, a lot of good strikeouts. What'd you like from the starting pitcher on Saturday?
Just his mental toughness, because, being a true freshman from Hewer High School, I don't know if you know where that high school's at, Macon, but he's a homeschooled kid. So Mac Hewer from Hewer High School comes out, and, to be put in those kinds of positions with those kinds of runners out there, in tough spots to where you could go and get an out, a punch out, or either a fly out, ground out, something lazy there, just goes to show you what kind of maturity that this young kid has. He didn't let the moment get too big. Obviously, this was a huge game. You know, you don't want to go down. You don't want to lose the series in the first two games. So a lot was riding on his performance. And with the bullpen kind of shaky or not knowing what you have with the bullpen, you were free to kind of, you know, navigate, you know, what was going on with him. The two home runs given up, the only two runs of the game for him, eight punch outs to one walk. I mean, he was able to do his thing up there. And then obviously Ryan Free and Josh Anders came in to shut her down. But that's just all for a mentality, and that's all for the mindset of this kid. This is only going to build his confidence. And to see a performance like that from a kid this young against a top 25 baseball team is going to go far. So big things coming up ahead for Big Mac. And, you know, we'll see exactly how far his trajectory goes. But he's a hell of a pitcher, and this moment definitely wasn't too big for him.
I think what is, you know, the best sign of this series is that, you know, there are some young members of this baseball club who are really going to play well. And you're pitching down that Saturday demonstrated exactly kind of the future that you're counting on. Like you mentioned, that was an immensely difficult spot to be in. You're being tasked on to affect, not really extend, because game three is going to be played no matter what, but to extend the hope of a series win. And to not only that, it was not easy. He worked hard inning after inning to work his way through some talented Texas hitters and keep, you know, keep both the lead and keep Texas from climbing back into it and really just doing his job to protect the rotation. And that's one thing that I think is so frustrating about Sunday is you really accomplished that goal. You did not have to throw too many pitchers out on Saturday. The staff was able to do a great job as a whole. You know, your relief pitching was very competent in this game as well. It was not like Tech would win this one off the back of a two-run error that occurred that really gave them some breathing room. But it was not an altogether easy effort. Texas pitched well in this game, even for them. That was one of their better pitching efforts. But you played a complete baseball game. You had some guys standing up, which is going to bring me to the conversation. We're two games into this series, having scored, seven plus runs in each game, and you're 1-1 in those. And that's going to be a telling story as we head to game three, where a similar event would transpire. But let's talk about that offense first through games 1 and 2. There's some known names that we're all aware of, but there's some guys who really stood up in this series and made a name for themselves. And one I want to talk about is Damian Bravo, who I don't want to spoil the, you know, too much, but obviously you lose game three, but he does extend his hitting streak through the weekend. I think it now sits at 15 or 16 straight games that he had hit as of the end of the Texas series. But Damian Bravo had some big hits and some big moments. Another name to know was Mr. Maxey was phenomenal in game two, was really the hero of game two. Joe, there were a lot of guys who needed to step up for this offense to thrive. At times, this offense under Tadlock has been too reliant on a couple of big bats to really be, you know, play a little bit of hero ball. Now, granted, everybody's hit well, more or less, in the Tadlock era, but you all know the names I'm talking about. The Young brothers being the biggest example, they were the guys you were expecting to come and do damage in big moments. But there are a lot of guys who stepped up this weekend. Let's start there. What has impressed you about the complete body of work for the batters so far?
Complete body of work's been great. We lead the Big 12 in all statistical categories, or at least major hitting categories. And then I believe we also do lead the nation in doubles, which I believe that hasn't slowed down this evening in the game against New Mexico State, which I believe they have two or three already in this ball game, which they're up 11-3. Damian Bravo's, I believe, hitting streak continued this evening. I don't know how they ruled one of his doubles, if they ruled it a double because it was a playable by the shortstop, but I believe his hitting streak has continued, has hit in all the Texas Tech's 16 games this year. And TJ Pompey is right there behind him. And I believe 14 of the 16 games with his 22 plus RBIs. And then Damian Bravo with 27 RBIs up into this point. And that's a live stat, as I say it, as we record right now. And it's been great. You know, me and Jack talked about this earlier on about a week or two ago about body of work and actually not having to rely on a Gavin Cash to come in and, you know, be your savior. to get a big hit. You have Gage Harrelson starting to swing a hot bat. Cade McGee, he is an on-base percentage phenom. Whether he's getting hit by a pitch or he's, you know, drawing a walk, his on-base percentage is up there. The TJ Pompey, Austin Green, some of these younger guys, the Landon Striplings, the Davis Rivers, those kinds of guys are all producing. And it's just, you know, given Tadlock so much flexibility with this lineup to where you could kind of mix and match different players out there because a lot of them are stroking the ball right now. Landon Stripling's another one of those cases. True freshman out of Georgia. He is the real deal. And early on in the season, we didn't know exactly what was going on with Gavin Cash's bat. And Landon was right there on his heels, and he's actually earned more playing time. So it's just a testament to what Coach Tadlock's been able to do with these batters. Coach Thomas as well, with, I believe he's a hitting coach. So all of these guys that are actually going out there and producing to where you're not relying on just one bat. Dylan Maxey filling in for Kevin Bazell is huge, and he did have a huge game as well, huge series. And he's continuing on his work. His number was called, and he's just going in there and doing what he needs to do. And that just propels this offense to higher heights. So, like I said, Coach Tadlock's is in a good position with a lot of skill position players out there, a lot of guys with the bat. You could mix and match lineups depending on what kind of pitcher they're throwing out there, lefty, righty, and you could feel confident in those players and those set players coming in and making a difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to talk about, but, you know, for all the big bats Tech has had over the last several years, and there have been a lot, and these lineups have, you know, I don't know how many years we've had lineups where, like, every guy's hitting over 300, et cetera, et cetera. This year, I think almost everyone's hitting over 250, with the exception of Tracer Lopez, with all the regular players, anybody with any substantial minutes logged. But, you know, what is very, you know, different, I think, about this team is the situational hitting was a lot better in the series. Granted, games one and two were not perfect from that perspective, but I really felt like until you got late until game three, that it did feel like if you got guys on the base path in a good situation, you could get them home. Which especially, I mean, last year it killed this team that you could not do it. No matter what the situation was, two on, runners at the corners, no out, bases loaded, didn't matter. You were scoring one run or nothing. I mean, that they just could not bring guys home in big moments, which ultimately killed them in the postseason and ended their season early and prevented them from hosting a regional in the first place. So this year, like, it's a little – I don't have the runners and scoring position stats in front of me, but, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it does feel like you can be a bit more confident up and down the lineup that there is somebody to bring everybody home. You know, really in game three, that the bases loaded situation late was the biggest, I think, bust of the weekend. There were a couple moments in game one and Friday where they didn't take care of business, but you were getting hammered so hard, it didn't matter. Other than that bases loaded situation game three, I thought they did a very good job moving runners along, continuing the threat, sustaining, getting crooked numbers. The problem, of course, is we get to game three and the pitching collapses after, I think it was like the fifth inning was when Texas took control of this game with several crooked runs in a go, run innings in a row. Once again, you lose the game scoring 7+ runs. This is the number one offense maybe in the nation. I don't think that's much at dispute. It's very, very early. We'll see how it continues as the competition continues to rise as you enter league play more seriously. But I think at the moment it feels safe to say that at the minimum, this is a top five offense in the nation. But baseball is one of the few sports where that doesn't matter. You have got to be able to pitch consistently, pitch well. And so far, the Red Raiders have not held up to that end of the bargain. Now, Tech would, of course, lose the series. But let's break this down because I think everything starts to go wrong. Trenton Parrish comes in. Parrish is one of your most consistent pitchers. I believe he had the staff's lowest ERA coming into the weekend. I think it was like a sub 2.75 ERA. You know, he had, by all accounts, is a very competent pitcher. He gets hammered. And at this point, the wheels just completely come off the bus. The bats, I think what happens a lot to this team is the offense, and it is a fault of great offenses, when they start to feel like it's not going to matter, they start to get desperate, and the approach of the plate changes, and they just don't look as comfortable. I've noticed that after when Texas tied the game and took the lead, it just felt like the bats were trying way too hard to compensate because they don't feel safe. But I'll be clear here. There is no reason that this game should have been lost by Tech. Texas did nothing in this game that was impressive. Tech made numerous dumb mistakes on the base pass, numerous dumb defensive mistakes, and the pitching was awful. It was just awful after the starter stepped out. Let's get into this game three a bit, Joe. It was the decisive one in the series. What disappointed you the most coming into a must-win game three about this performance? What was the most frustrating thing that you saw?
It's not being able to complete the game. I mean, Trendon Parrish, to your point, is one of the best arms that we have coming out of the bullpen, one of your most complete arms, the one you could rely on, the one you could trust to be put in a tough situation. And I was actually ecstatic that they were bringing him in. I was like, all right, things are going to settle down. We're going to, you know, get a hold of this thing, bring in Trendon Parrish and then Josh Sanders, and then potentially Huffling to close out the game. I'm like, okay, I could deal with that. But Trendon Parrish just was finding too much of the strike zone. And Texas, you know, they, as bad as they've played, they do have some guys that could hit the ball. Gasparino, as much as a douchebag as he is, he's a hell of a ball player. And it's some of those guys, the left fielder, Porter Brown as well, just these guys could hit the ball. And if you're catching too much of the plate and you're giving them hitters counts, they're going to make you pay. I mean, yes, he only gave up one walk, but a lot of those counts he was pitching behind, and he hadn't been doing that all year to this point. So I don't know if it exactly was just an off game for Trendon, but I do believe he should have been pulled a whole lot sooner than he was. I think his leash was a little too long, and we ultimately paid the price for leaving him out there. Josh Sanders came in, Parker Hitura, and then Brendan Lysick all came in, and then they shut the Longhorns down. But I think leaving Trendon in there for too long ultimately, you know, was the demise of this team, giving up those five runs. Four of them were earned. One of them was not. And I believe he had two strikeouts and one walk. And he only threw 31 pitches. I mean, it wasn't like he had this high pitch count by any means. I mean, he just got stroked. And that's, like I said, you get in those hitter counts. I mean, and you catch too much of the plate, they're going to make you pay. Even a 7-5 or a 8-6 team at that point in time, Texas team, but they're still a top 25 nationally rated team with guys who could hit the ball. And that essentially cost us this game and cost us the series. But I don't believe I don't think Trendon's going to continue this streak. I think he's going to bounce back and he'll be the Trendon of before.
For me personally, I think the best way to sum up what was frustrating about this game is there's the moment where Gavin Cash gets run over at first base. And first, if you actually believe that was a normal baseball play, you're one, a fucking moron, and two, know literally nothing about baseball. The play was over by a mile. Cash is stepping across the first baseline to start turning towards the dugout, and he extends his arm to make contacts and clubs him. It was a dick move. It was dirty, and he should have been tossed from the series, right? Like that, if you honest to God think in the history of baseball that he couldn't have pulled up when he realized he was out by a mile and that he just had to de-cleat a kid who was just doing his job on the first baseline, you're a fucking idiot. And I truly believe most Texas baseball fans must be, because there was a large number who kept complaining, we're taught this since middle school. Fuck you mean what were you taught since middle school? That was the dumbest shit I've ever heard. And it was unacceptable, and it is actually becoming a reoccurring issue with playing Texas, that their players are just dirty. They're just dirty, poorly run programs. They got more money than sense in Austin. They buy top talent. They don't install any discipline. And this is the crap that keeps happening. So first and foremost, I never want to hear Texas fans whine about class or arrogance ever again, because there is a special, special kind of stupid that has to look at the at all this stuff happening and think, yeah, none of it was their fault. None of it. These were all normal plays. I mean, just at this point, I'm glad Texas is gone because there is something that there is a real sense that the rivalry has gotten out of control in the last several years, especially since the announcement of Texas leaving. But like, I'm tired of playing them because they're going to hurt somebody. Seriously, they're going to hurt somebody. I don't know what the fuck is going on in Austin, but it's getting worse and worse every year. They're going to hurt somebody. And if somebody gets hurt in the course of a regular game, fine. That's cool. But how many times are we going to deal with Texas's programs being out of control before somebody says the quiet part out loud? But they're just not worried about discipline out in Austin. They just aren't. They're going to buy the best talent, and they're going to let them run wild, and, you know, whatever. That's my little soapbox for a moment on that front, just to point out, if you are dumb enough to think that happened in the normal course of a baseball game, you should fucking have to wear a special hat so we can all identify you as an idiot. That's my two cents.
Yeah, I was always taught whenever I was running to first base, if that happened, to either try to grab the guy and just, you know, not take him down to the ground, but just use him as leverage so you don't fall either. So whenever he extended his arms instead of just try to hold himself up with Cash's body, that's whenever it went from a baseball play to a dirty play. In my opinion, that's what I think.
I mean, I think it's even simpler than that. I was taught at no level were you ever supposed to intentionally not avoid contact. The play is over. This was not a close play at first. Look, if he hits Cash in a tight play at first, or maybe Cash is blocking the plate or in his way, that's okay because that's running hard through first base to try to make a play for your ball club. This was not close. He saw Cash complete that out with a full half the base path left. At no level of baseball are you taught, because here's the thing, it's not a lot. You can't even do this at home plate. He went to try to knock the ball out of Cash's hand. He tried to hit him as hard as he could to knock the ball out of Cash's hand because it was over and he was pissed. It was a frustration play for a bad ground ball and a part of the game where it looked like Texas might start to climb back into it and ended a Longhorn threat. And it looked like at that point in the game that Tech has control. It was frustration. And if anyone out there is honestly dumb enough to look at that and think, yeah, he just couldn't avoid the contact, then you might be the stupidest man in America. There's just no reason to believe this was necessary. Which call a spade a spade, because that's what's frustrating about it, right? It's like we can't even have the discussion about like some of these plays because you've got honest to God Texas fans whining about during the basketball game. I think it was Williams who went up for a shot and a Texas player caught an elbow. And they're like, well, that's why Brock Cunningham did it. It's like, dude, that's a normal basketball play. Brock Cunningham tried to kill a kid. And after this shit, we've got people going, well, I was taught that you're supposed to get out of the way. Cash thinks the inning's over. There should have been no threat to his person. And all he's doing is just turning to the umpire to confirm that the out's happening and looking to celebrate with his team. I've ranted about this too long because, like, I get frustrated. Like, it's a dirty hit on premise, but, like, the denial out of Austin, when if I swear to God, if a Tech player had done that, I promise you, if this had happened in Austin and a Tech player had to pull that crap, somebody from Travis County Police Department would have been down there to arrest the kid. I promise you they would have been calling for him to get pulled off the field. They would have wanted that kid's family. They would have doxed his parents. Like, it just like the double standard from the Burnt Orange faithful is beyond maddening. And it's why everybody hates them. It's why there is not a single program in the nation that likes Texas. It's because of their fans. Talked about this during the basketball game. It's okay to be hated. It's okay to have other programs not like you. But, you know, I think you should earn it the respectable way, which is just by being a dick all the time instead of the sanctimonious crap we deal with at Austin. But, you know, that's my point. Just want to say that because, you know, it keeps happening. I mean, I don't know how many more games we're going to have against Texas in any sport, but an odd coincidence this seems to keep occurring. Now, to close out our discussion here, Joe, because Tech is currently putting it on the New Mexico State, which is a good turnaround after a tough series loss. But let's really look at this in the bigger picture of the Big 12 race. Texas was reeling coming into this series, having been hammered by Texas A&M, lost several games in surprising fashion. Texas State, they lost to, blanking on the name now, but it was the Toros earlier in the year. So this is not a good year for the Texas baseball program to date, but Tech would drop this series. There are a lot of good baseball teams in the Big 12. What does this do seriously for your efforts down the line for the rest of the year?
I don't think it's going to have much meaning, to be completely honest. TCU's been struggling as well, and they were pick number one to be on top of the Big 12 this year. That's what the preseason poll was. I think it was TCU, Texas, Oklahoma State, and then us. And I believe that none of the top four teams are necessarily taking the reins and running away with it. So I think it's fairly open. I said earlier in a podcast that Tech's probably going to end up somewhere, as long as they're consistently hitting the ball, getting the solid innings out of their bullpen, getting some actual innings out of your starting pitching. I think this team is capable of being somewhere in that 1-3 line whenever it's all said and done. But they're, with it being so early in the season and all the top four teams necessarily not, like I said, taking the reins and doing something bigger with it, I think it's still fairly open. I do think you wish maybe towards the end of the conference season that you could have at least one of these wins back, but I don't think it's going to negatively hurt you when it's all said and done.
My problem is I'm not necessarily worried that there aren't a lot of winnable baseball games left, but you're not going to win any of them pitching like that. Granted, not everybody in the Big 12, for all Texas's faults, they've hit the ball pretty consistently well, and most teams in the Big 12 lack a lot of high-end offensive firepower of this caliber. I think you saw offenses 1 and 2 go at it this weekend, but the trick is, you can't lose home series. You can't lose home basketball games, and for Tech baseball in particular, losing home baseball series is a death blow. Because I mean no offense to Tim Tadlock, who's a fantastic coach, but let's be clear here. We have sucked on the road under Tadlock. They have lost a whole bunch of series that they shouldn't have. It happens every year. You're going to drop a series you should not drop, or you're going to get swept in a series you should not get swept on the road. It is going to happen. Almost without fail, it happens every year because the style of baseball Tech plays, where you're relying on a lot of high-scoring offense and no pitching, you can't do it in every ballpark. There just are some that don't play to your offense. I think the worst example I can think of was 3-4 years ago, where you were playing a Baylor team that was just dog shit terrible and got swept in Waco. I mean, it happens every year under Tim Tadlock coach teams. You're going to drop one. You shouldn't, because this team just isn't built to go on the road. It's why they've struggled so much in the postseason the last several years. It is why everyone keeps griping about the same thing, because there are ceilings, hard ceilings on college baseball teams that can't pitch. So losing a home baseball series is pretty devastating to the larger goals of the year, which included winning the Big 12, earning a regional host, super regional host, etc. It doesn't have to be the end of the world, but it needs to be a significant wake-up call, because you can win a lot of games. I don't think there are many Big 12 teams that are seriously better than you, quote-unquote, but you're going to lose all of them pitching like that. That's just the reality of the situation. Granted, again, the odds of you having another just complete collapse like Friday are pretty low, even for the staff. But that has to be the wake-up call. That can't happen ever again. You can't have multiple games lost in one series if you're scoring 8+. You don't have to be perfect with this offense. It's good enough to win games 7-4, 7-5, 9-4, 9-5. These kind of high-scoring baseball games are typical of the Tech era, because you just don't have the staff. Nor do a lot of teams in college baseball, for that matter. But Tech in particular has not had it. That's all. That needs to be the wake-up call to this pitching staff, to Matt Gardner, to Tim Tadlock. It's this can't continue, because you'll lose a lot more that you shouldn't. And you've got to protect your home ballpark. Lubbock is uniquely built and designed for the perfect version of Tadlock baseball, which is hit the piss out of the ball and pray the pitching holds on. Which brings me to our absolute last point of the conversation, and one that I think is becoming less of a debate and more of just kind of a what is going to change about it. This is not unusual now at Texas Tech to have good baseball teams fail due to poor pitching. Matt Gardner has retained his job despite the numerous years of poor pitching dooming numerous teams. At this point, I'm not certain there are many Matt Gardner loyalists have left, but I do want to check in with you, Joe. Joe, there are a lot of people, who, myself included, who think Gardner is the biggest problem this program has, and Tadlock letting him stay is loyal, to be clear, but a mistake. Where do you fall on this spectrum? Is it time to make a change just to try to shake something up in the pitching department?
There's nothing wrong with change. I've been on the take him out of the pitching position coach change for the last 2 years now, and I still Stanley am firm on that. He just, like I said, he hasn't done enough. There hasn't been enough pitching here that he's had success with, but yet some of these pitchers leave here and have success somewhere else. So was it the coaching or was it the pitcher? I think it's necessarily would be the coaching of how he's treating and how he's working these pitchers out, because a lot of these guys that Texas Tech has had that have left, no names to be mentioned, but those guys who made it to the Razorbacks is having himself quite a season, and it's early on, so it could turn negative real quick. But I mean, he's having a hell of a start to the season. And so are you trying to say that it was the pitching issue or if it was a coaching issue? Because to me, it just seems like a coaching issue. I think he should have been gone 2 years ago. It sucks that Tadlock's loyal to the T to this guy, but I think there's nothing wrong with change. There's absolutely nothing wrong with change to change the culture around this pitching staff. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if this season ultimately turns into a cluster, which I hope it doesn't, but if it does turn into a cluster on the pitching side, I do think he needs to at least be up for an evaluation that says, hey, man, this just ain't working out. You're hurting our team and costing us games here. So we're going to move in a different direction. But I know that that's Tadlock's call to make. I don't think that's necessarily a Kirby kind of thing. I think it's just, hey, we need to make a change here. And I'm all for that change. And I know that a lot of Red Raider Nation feels the same way.
I want to say, for all the doom and gloom out of this weekend, you know, you can turn this around with I don't know exactly what will do it, but with some, you know, grit, some maybe change in approach of how you're calling pitches, et cetera, to try to get the staff and motivate them and have them play better. We saw in the last several years, guys who pitched poorly to start years really show up. The regional last year, I think, is the best example of this. The pitching staff was fucking terrible all last season. And I mean that with no personal offense to their effort or character, but they were awful. We all can admit that they consistently lost games they shouldn't have. Then you get to the regional, and it was like it was the second coming of like an MLB pitching staff out there. Nobody could hit them. They were getting strikeouts. They were working through problems. Despite the fact that it was a long road out of the loser's bracket, they battled every game and put you in opportunities to get out of that regional, despite the fact your offense never arrived in that one. So like that can happen to this staff, right? You can have a spark, a couple of guys come into their own, they find the right slot for them, and everything changes. You're not going to fire a pitching coach mid-year, no matter what anybody might want. But I think Matt Gardner absolutely has to be coaching for his job right now. And I think to your point about like, what is Kirby's role in this? Kirby's role is to tell the baseball coach he gave a lifetime contract to, if you don't start fucking winning again, we're going to find the money to go get somebody who can. Tim Tadlock is a fantastic baseball coach. He built this program for nothing. But it does remain, need to be said, the returns are diminishing, folks. Every year has gotten a little worse for the last four or five. Since COVID, Tech baseball has steadily won less and less, less and less. You haven't been to Omaha in a while. You didn't make the Super last year. You didn't host last year. They continue to fall down in the Big 12 hierarchy. This conference is not good enough for where Tech is at a program now with the resources they command for Tech to not consistently be playing for a Big 12 title. But the issue is that it's beyond that. You need to be competing for regional hosting spots, super regionals, Omaha, because we pay Tadlock a lot of money. And I love Tim Tadlock to death, but I'll be damned as an AD if I'm going to sit there and let a good baseball coach throw his career away for personal loyalty. Because at that point, this point, that's all it is, right? Why doesn't Tadlock move on from Gardner? Because he is fiercely loyal to his assistants. And that can be a positive thing. It's why I think a lot of great assistants have hung around Tech as long as they have, when I'm sure other schools have come sniffing. But it's time to say this isn't working. You mentioned a young man over at Arkansas. The fact that you couldn't keep him in Lubbock is a problem on face value. You're telling me there was nobody who was willing to give that kid enough money to keep him in Lubbock? So it did come down to he looked at the Red Raiders, he looked at the Razorbacks, and he thought, my best path to the MLB is not here. And to be fucked, I'm going to say he's right. I mean, how many Tech pitchers are actually seriously in the MLB competing for regular spots? There aren't many, because we only produce about one a year who's worth anything. I mean, it's maddening how many staffs we've done this with. One ace, one stud reliever, the rest we're just praying and praying and hoping that we score enough runs to get out of this. So, look, the season is not over. There's a lot of baseball left to be played. But it is very, very, very frustrating to see the same problems bog down another good offense. You know, you don't even have to be great pitching, but I think it was like almost every guy is up to 7. I think the ERA of the staff is over 12 or 13 now. I mean, it's just a joke. So Matt Gardner has to be coaching for his job. There's just no – if he continues to keep his job and this plays out like it has in previous seasons where they don't really improve and maybe they have one big moment or two, but in the end – they cost you another offense and you underachieve again. It's got to be his last, because there's just no reason not to. There are pitching coaches out there that could get this figured out. So if he isn't the guy, find somebody who is and move on. All righty. That's going to bring us to the end of this. We didn't have an opportunity to talk about Baylor, but we're actually running a bit long. Not shocking. Texas Tech has Baylor this weekend. It'll be a 3-game series of the Big 12. Baylor's obviously not necessarily the greatest baseball program. Should be a chance for Texas Tech to get right in this one. Should be a great opportunity for the program to get on the positive side of the Big 12 record. Hopefully they're able to do so. My hope is that maybe our resident baseball expert, Jack Bell, will be free to maybe hop on with Joe later on this week. If not, at least we got to talk about the Big Texas series, talk about some of the lessons learned, and we'll have more content for you guys. We're actually going to switch gears here in a minute and start our second half of the recording, in which we're talking about basketball. But I'll close this episode here with saying, Rec'em, guys. Hopefully this did not sour all the other accomplishments of the weekend, including a track and field national title. A huge congratulations to that program, as well as the GOAT, Mr. Texas Tech Track himself, Coach Kitley. What he's doing is incredibly impressive, considering that, you know, I don't know the full history of track and field at Tech, but you're competing against a lot of blue blood programs that compete in that field, and he's consistently had Tech competing for national titles, and he got another one. So congratulations to him and all the athletes involved in the men's indoor program. But that'll do it for this episode. We're not done recording. We'll be talking basketball here in a minute, but that'll do it for right here.